Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. This platform right here is dedicated to industry heroes such as yourself by pointing at the video. You are bold, you are brave. You dare greatly, you innovate, you are changing the lives and you're changing the world as we speak. You're solving problems too. I'm sure I can continue to add to that list, but you get the picture. You are wonderful. All right, in the hot seat, we've got a gentleman by the name of David Reed. He's got a big, long, impressive title with NOV, which is the company, Chief Technology Officer and Chief Marketing Officer. He's bull. He is that good. All right, let's get cracking with the interview. Yeah, I'm telling you, man, I had a great conversation. What has always been very fascinating with me as I continue to interview these great individuals like David and others is the level of innovation, the level of commitment to that innovation, the level of leveraging technology to make our lives better, to serve our customers, to do what is necessary to continue to move forward and, of course, change the world and the lives. And David, the innovation is off the charts, and we'll get into that in the interview. So I'm interviewing, or I've talked to, and I've worked with a company called Cap Logistics, and we talk about innovation. And one of the areas that has been a real topic of conversation has been logistics. It's been supply chain. It's been how do you source? What do we need to do? How do you create resiliency in that whole chain? And so the conversation with Cap Logistics, which they're all about uptime. They're uptime logistics. That means keeping your asset up and running when something has to be brought in and brought in quickly and making it happen. They are the best at it, no doubt about it. But anyway, they are committed to looking at that from an innovative perspective, that supply chain. They never sleep. And it's just like NOV and others within industry. They don't sleep. They're trying to figure out and continue to figure out innovative solutions to make your life better. And it's just always just great to have these conversations with leaders such as Cap Logistics in logistics and supply chain and how they are absolutely committed to making this world a better place. I don't know. I've just, you know, this whole journey within the industry space, you know, space and being able to speak to people such as David and company has been just an absolute joy. Because if you're young and if you're looking at getting into industry, logistics, whatever, it is a really great time because it's constantly changing. It's moving forward. I don't even know what the future looks like, but I guarantee it's going to be absolutely bright. One last thing. We've been talking about Industrial Talk 2.0, and the platform itself is dedicated to providing, because once again, a lot of education going on there, and with all of this stuff that's happening within innovation, we need to educate more and more. But the other component, so we educate, we collaborate, and that is probably the heart of all of this innovation that's taking place, is that great companies are coming together, great people are coming together to innovate, to solve problems, to you know, improve that bottom line, bring in opportunities. There is that innovation. So we educate, innovate, and collaborate, of course. That's what the Industrial Talk 2.0 is all about. We're doing a little refresh of the website that is focused in all that. If you want to find people like David Reed and others and understand and you want to collaborate, Industrial Talk is where it is. Okay, on to the interview. David Reed, NOV, and from an innovation point of view, we talk a lot about a lot of things. But from an oil and gas perspective, they're doing some great things. And what is really spectacular about the conversation, there's no fear. They want to be able to really do what is necessary and approach it from a business perspective and really deploy the capital that is needed to make it happen. They're changing the way business is done in so many areas within industry. That's NOV. That's definitely Team David Reed. All right, on to the interview. Enjoy, David. David, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. You're a hard man to get on the program, just FYI.
I'm just busy.
I know you're busy, but listeners, it's been probably 5 years in the making to get, I'm not exaggerating, get David on the podcast because he's that good. I wasn't going to let this one go. That's a bald-faced lie.
Yeah, there you go.
A bald head lie, but it's, but anyway, you are very difficult. You're a busy man. You got a lot of great stuff happening at NOV. But before we get into that conversation, give us a little 411 on who David is, because your freaking stat card out there is stacked on LinkedIn.
I don't know what that means, but I believe
you. Yeah, you got it. You're into sports. You watch. You do a little rugby. It's a stat card. It's your business stat. Work with me. Yeah, work with me. I'm hip.
All right, cool.
Friend, boy, I'm working with a.
I'm definitely a LinkedIn child. So yeah, that's my space. So.
It is, man. Yeah, look at that. You got. Oh, look at David Red. See,
that makes sense.
A little background, man.
All right. I am Scottish, which, you know, is hard to tell if someone who's Scottish is listening, but everyone else seems to get that. A bit of an accent, but
I can't come to you and borrow money. That's what I can't. I can't come to you and borrow money.
That's right. But if you need me to help you save money, I'm your man. So I want cheap, but it has to be the best, but cheap. So yeah, that's me. I actually married a Californian, so I met her in Scotland and went out. I was doing architecture originally, finishing college, and then got married in Scotland, went back to California, did some work in Southern California, work in Northern California, then came back to Scotland and didn't do so well in architecture there. So someone offered me a job in oil and gas, which I didn't really want to do, but I'm like, okay, the money's good. And found a really bizarre company that was based in California, funnily enough, who were really different in how they treated people and how they thought. And I just kept getting drawn in by that. And so when I first got on drilling rigs, started working on large robots, and I was supposed to be measuring to fit one. I designed another robot, which wasn't really my job. And I kind of worked on solutions for that. And then the management found out, they moved me back to California. And I started being the designer of the kind of rig floors and new equipment and technology. And then moved to Houston. We're a very acquisitive company, so we buy lots of companies. So moved to Houston for one of the acquisitions, continued to push technology and new ideas. Kind of stayed around that for years. A lot of software stuff, early on, we started building large packages as we bought different companies. We put them together, eliminated cost, eliminated engineering, kept pushing tech. And then that went really well through a large growth cycle, and we got to standardize across many rigs. I was very much involved in that. And then since then, we've kind of expanded out into completion, production, renewables has been new, and then industrial. So yeah, we're very much a manufacturer, and I've got to be part of the strategy and thinking of the company over years. There you go.
29 years.
CTO, CMO, whatever that means. But
a hell of a name, a hell of a title.
They don't pay me twice. That's the only thing we're working on. So,
well, clearly 29 years, it means that you're having a good time and they're doing a lot of great things. What always interests me, especially from an oil and gas perspective, is the innovation, is the technology. And to survive, you really have to be committed to that. Yeah, I mean, it looks cool.
Yeah, we do a lot of fun stuff. I think that's, and the company I was in was very edgy and pushy. But I think what people don't catch with oil and gas is they come from this wildcatting thinking.
They do.
And they like, they'll do things with, you know, we've met with NASA many times and they're like, what are you, crazy? You know, you're like, we were doing 10,000 feet of water. We're going to put controls down there and try and manage wells. And they're just like, Mission to Mars people thought we were nuts.
No way.
Oh, okay. Maybe
and?
A bit out there. We did it.
Of course you did.
Government had a plan. Originally it was the Japanese government had a 7-year plan to do it. And within 2 years we'd done it commercially. And we learned there was pain, but we're willing to do that. We're kind of out on the edge willing to push technology very fast. So
here's where we're going with this conversation, listeners. So you go out to their website, NOV, and then you go to the products, and you root around there, and they're doing some. They're doing big things, which is pretty cool. And it's a cool website. Honestly, I've rooted around there. One of the things I want to really talk about is this C-Box. Now, you're saying to yourself, Scott, what's a C-Box? It's a badass water treatment solution that I have no idea, but David has the idea. And we're going to go down that road. Talk to us a little bit about the C-Box.
So C-Box is a large, almost three-story building. It sits on the bottom of the sea. It can sit on the ocean. It really doesn't care if it's a sea or an ocean. So maybe it wasn't the best name, but we started it in Norway. So it's the sea box, not the ocean box. or a golf box or, we
just chose right.
Which in our language, subsea is kind of what we talk about, and it's not always the sea.
Right.
It's basically a processing system that uses the hydrostatic head of the water. So the pressure of all that water over it to power it. And so what it does, it has a bunch of filters and that pushes the water through the filter. So you don't use any energy to clean water. And so you have this giant building that's constantly processing water and cleaning out all of the microbes, and it allows it to get down to a fine enough water. And then we have the other part is powered, which is for taking out the salt. And so then we could actually create almost a potable water by very low energy as well as very limited real estate on the surface. So it's a very kind of breakthrough idea.
And go out to the website. And so they got this video out there and I'm looking at it and it doesn't do it justice. I'm just like, oh, that's pretty cool. Isn't that cute? But then you scroll down and you look at it. Yeah, it's three stories. It's big. It's got some substance. And of course, it's got people standing next to it. That's why I know it's big and has some substance. How many do you have deployed already?
There's two right now. So it's early. This is really kind of, we did small prototypes, built them out, tested them, proved them on the box itself. And then the SWIT, which is subsea salt removing system, came after. And so we've just proved that out. And of course, if this works, I mean, the original driver was when they looked to get oil out of the ground. And I mean, most people think they're these big caverns, but oil is actually trapped in rocks that are quite porous. And so you actually can push the rocks and create pressure by putting pretty clean water in there. And it allows it to kind of push out the hydrocarbons. But to do that, you have to have a very clean setup. So the truth is that's also potable water, right? So, I mean, the potential for countries, as it proves out, gets really interesting.
Now, you were talking about the hydrostatic pressure of the water. Is there a minimum depth that is needed to be able to make that thing run?
It's pretty shallow, actually. I mean, it's kind of, I mean, I know the system we have is running offshore Norway you can see it. I mean, you can't actually see it because it's under the water.
I was going to say, what? Is it poking its head above water or what?
A little hand wave.
It's like, hey, there's a flag out there. Watch it.
It's that close. So you're in the, in that case, you're in the, tens of, under 100 feet of water. But I think it's up to 300 feet is what the plan is right now. But that's enough hydrostatic head to run the system. What's cool is the system doesn't need to be touched for 4 or 5 years. So it's designed to never need to have any parts taken off or maintained.
Now, that's a good point because I was going to ask that question, but it's just you drop it, do a couple of things, get the water flowing, good to go, leave it alone.
Right. And we, a lot of the parts are actually a composite material. So we took one of our factories and converted the bridge crane into a giant CNC and started cutting composite so we could put this whole thing down there and it can last without seeing any even steel failure.
Come on. We're having a sexy conversation here. This is pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
It is, man. When you just, your crane and you converted it into a CNC.
Yeah.
I want to see that too.
We had to do it ourselves. I mean, the guys just wrote the code and said, well, and we realized, of course, we could do big additive manufacturing as well, the kind of 3D printing of large objects, because it's just a sixth access to an existing system. But yeah, you know, the team in the south of England put that together, did a great job. We use that same, if you can imagine, you can do large composite structures. We make bridges for rail that can install in an hour, as opposed where you build two large parts. These are walkway bridges. Whereas normally you'd be shutting down a railway line for a few days just to install a bridge system. So there's some really cool things you can do when you have large composite structures, and they just last such a long time. You know, they don't need repainting. They're just really, it's great materials.
So, yeah, and the people that live down there then on the sea floor, because I'm using sea box, they don't really care what it looks like.
That's right. It doesn't have to be
It's not an eyesore. It's like, I don't care.
In your real estate, nobody's asking you for fees. You're just
putting
it there and producing.
Dump it out there. But what precipitated? Why did you go down this road? Why is this necessary for you guys and going forward? What's the future look like?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that we're always trying to push the edge, you know, and try and find what could we do. Water was actually high on our list a number of years back, maybe a decade ago, we started looking at it. And then there were so many players in the space. We couldn't quite differentiate enough. There, when you get too many, it's kind of, we play in renewables, but there are lots of people there. So for us, the thing to do is actually find the weak point of anything or the opportunity. And oil and gas is a great funder. So for us to do this with oil and gas is easy. If we'd have tried to get others to fund just as a water purification project. Now you've got lots of people playing in the space.
Yeah.
We're in quite a tight environment where they need the water, and they build it usually on the surface in the platform system, a water purification system.
See, it's interesting because that's a good point, because I'm reading a book called Play Bigger. And what you guys innately did is you defined your category. You just went out there and said, okay, there's a lot of players over here. It's pretty bloody water, and I don't want to be over here. But over here, it's blue ocean. Sorry, I had to use that. That's what they call it, blue ocean.
Well, there you go.
It is.
We were literal when we read that.
That's right. It all comes together. It's
in the blue ocean. We do that a lot. I mean, we're big in fiberglass systems in general, but generally there's a lot of players. So it's finding the niches that you can really play well in. Like we do half of the gas stations in the U.S. We do their tanks and their piping. And that's because legislation played our way, where you needed quality and you needed an air gap, a really well-designed air gap between all of your piping systems and your tanks. And so for us, we came out with technical solutions. Nobody was able to play. They all had kind of lower-end type solutions and non-metallics, and just managed to win that business. And so for us, it's finding the spaces. It's hard for someone to go to.
Yeah, see, that's smart. That's smart stuff. But I see more, I got it. Oil and gas, important, get it, injection, got it. But the humanitarian side of this is pretty big too.
Yeah. Well, and particularly, I mean, as we're all developing, I mean, it's a funny thing about oil and gas. Everyone thinks that they're just people who are just raping and pillaging the earth.
It's a bunch of BS.
Yeah. So, I mean, understanding that what we did was we changed the planet. That's at the core of everyone in oil and gas, is this idea of making things better for everybody. It's what we do. It's what we've done. It's just we're not very good PR agents. We're mostly engineers doing the work.
Yeah.
And so energy has that as well. I think what's weird, and I know in our company, I don't know if everyone's this way, but we have this natural tendency to care about the people around us, the environment, the communities. So everywhere you go, we have these great stories, but you won't find those on our website because most corporations are trying to make themselves sound better than they are, whereas we're actually okay. Like, we're good people who do good things. We try not to take advantage of that. So, I mean, we're all naturally givers and carers in the industry. And so for us, moving into renewables, I mean, we've been in that space, but not in any way we could write home about, not big enough. Because there just wasn't the right money or the right space. But we did win towers at one time and we got out of them. We now are back in because we found a way to manufacture through a spiral system where we actually spiral up and build the giant structures on site rather than shipping these large.
It's like a 3D printer.
It is a bit. Sort of. You're still welding. Yeah, you're still welding, you know, plate, but at the end of the day, it allows you to not deal with the transportation problems.
See, that's huge.
Get big. So that's an innovation that's worth it. And it's hard for people to catch up on those things.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
So if every time we can find something that's a bit different, that will be hard for someone to do.
You know, and an industrial geek like me, I've seen those videos out on YouTube where they're just trying to move a blade around a corner.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare. For whatever reason, they decided to manufacture that blade up on top of a mountain, and then they want to bring it on down to. I never understood that. However, that's not me, but it's.
But that's our. If you think, I mean, we have a new system we're putting out right now for installing. We've looked at this crane problem with wind towers for a long time, and we originally designed a system that didn't need a crane, where the tower became its own crane and it was using the main stock of the tower.
It's like its own gin pole. That's what it is.
That's what we did originally. Yeah. That didn't really have a great business model to it. So we went back and said, okay, we do moving rigs that walk themselves. We do these giant structures that can actually walk between wells. We do that every day. Why wouldn't we build a great crane system that can actually hold and deal with the heavy wind issues? Because you end up renting these giant expensive cranes and then it's too windy to put the tower up, you know? So how do we do that without? So we're playing with that right now. That's a new product we're bringing out. But it's just what we've learned on drilling rigs already is how to telescope a structure. We're doing that with cranes on, you know, the giant wind towers keep getting bigger and bigger.
Oh, they're huge. They're massive. They're just like, yeah.
So we just got a crane contract. We built a telescoping crane, which of course is the answer. When you're trying to do that, you can't carry that big structure around, but it's just what we do with drilling masts. It's nothing different to us. But so there's a lot of things where we can apply ourselves. I mean, we have, I can go on.
No. But that's cool because that's where the innovation comes from. You're trying to solve. I get it. The renewables going to be around. I get it. Oil and gas going to be around. How do you work together? How do you play together? How do you collaborate? How do you take the best of one industry and apply it to another? And you're just doing that. That's cool.
Yeah. There's a bunch of like EPC culture problems that happen, right? So when you're paying someone an hourly rate to do something, they're selling you hourly rates, right? So the ultimate product is a project, which can vary pretty badly. Projects can die. So that whole game. So we've for years believed, as we took on things that were EPC and we bought all the different parts and put it together, we were able to take masses of cost out and do things faster. So that kind of opens up the door. I mean, we looked at it in biogas and we looked at the structures and systems and went, my first question was, did you use an engineering house to do this? And they went, well, yeah, but how do you know that? I can tell by the materials and by it's the best of the best. This is a terrible economic and product solution that you're using everywhere. There's no standard, there's no industrialization. And so we're looking at that from our fiberglass side. They use pretty high-end metals and we're like, just use fiberglass. It's cheaper, better, it's lighter, it's a good idea. And then, you know, productize it. We already built all the internals. We do sewage systems, it's the same stuff. And so we were already mixers and munchers and the movers of slurries. And so all of that stuff was easy for us, but building a complete integrated system just saves a ton of money.
God, I love how you guys are thinking outside. You know, here's your industry, and this is what you're supposed to play in. That's what everybody says, but you're saying, no. We've done that. We can be over here. We can do this. Yeah. We can deploy the stuff that we've learned. That's. See, I'm all tingly. Yeah. Doggone it, David. Just all tingly. Yeah. You're amazing. I love that. Now. With that said, I've got to ask the question, and I want you to sort of politically finesse your way around it. One of the challenges that renewables have, and if you guys are going into it, and I guarantee you, you're going to go into it from the perspective of a great business case, and deploying things that are specifically to reduce costs, be more efficient, whatever it might be, what are the drivers? Today, that's a big challenge for renewables. And for renewables to be able to truly do an impact in a renewable way, are going to have to live that world.
It's expensive. It is a very expensive place. So, yeah, we struggle. I mean, we do pretty extensive business case work trying to work out who's buying and why and who's making money here. Because there's a lot of infrastructure investment. There's kind of two sides to why it's growing at the rate it is. One is that countries want power and they want control of their power. And they've found a method. So Europe particularly, because they have their own relationship with Russia, which is very tenuous when it comes to energy delivery, but causes this political nightmare. So countries don't want to feel tied to other countries, much like you saw the shale boom here. What it did for the US is we stopped having to buy oil from countries you may not want to, you know. Of course, that may back up now as the government changes.
Yeah, but you got to like the fact that you don't want to be beholden to somebody or some country or somebody. I mean, it makes sense to be able to develop a business.
Most people didn't know, right? So if people don't know, it doesn't move the government, right? So because they want people to vote. So most people didn't know that we were 80% importing our oil, you know. And they also didn't know that stopped. I mean, our gas, we did huge damage to Canada because they supplied a lot of the gas. And suddenly there was no one to sell to. So LNG came about because they have to ship it somewhere. And
that's true.
LNG is not a great moneymaker. It's just a game to get your gas, you know, to be a player in the energy trading world, you know. So it's a difficult
move, you know. If you ever, you know, put this on your bucket, not your bucket list, not because I guarantee you, David, you've been there. But if you have an opportunity, listener, to go to an LNG terminal, do so. It's massive.
Well, just in simple terms, if you're going to take an energy and use energy to convert it to something else, to
a liquid,
take it somewhere else, to use energy to convert it back where do you think the business case is, you know?
And it takes a lot of energy. I mean, it's...
Yeah, and then it's the cheap energy on the planet that we have today. That's what you're going to go after. It's like, you can tell you there's something else going on, you know.
So, God, see, yeah, just the tip of the iceberg, my friend. Where's this? I mean, I know that they're probably roadblocks, and I think that you guys are pretty pragmatic when it comes to determining what is right, what's wrong, where to go, where to spend your money, and all that stuff. It seems like you're willing to take some level of risk to say, does it work? We'll go down this road. Sure. We'll give it a shot. We'll make it. It didn't work. We'll back off like you did with the wind. And now you came back and you said, let's take another bite at that apple and let's do it.
Yeah. Well, and we allow, so this isn't normal for corporations our size. I mean,
no.
I was with the guys yesterday. We have a full kind of startup environment where we do rapid prototyping of tons of things. And no part of our large organization can behave this way. They can buy whatever they want, wherever they want, quickly, try things, test it. So within days, my next meeting is with a SpaceX and NASA kind of thing.
I know you freaking name droppers. No,
but I mean, when we started this project, I'm like, this is a year and a half ago. I'm talking to them and I'm like, we can go as slow as you like if that's what it takes for you. But I'd rather go fast, and I'm really at breaking point on that. Because I went and talked to our team yesterday, and like, we can do that in a few days and have it tested, see if it works, as opposed to a year and a half of I can't believe how much they want to talk, you know. So
that's your dead sexy group. I work in the dead sexy department, and we just get to play around and dead sexy stuff.
That's what they do, and they're just and it's what led us into renewables about 7 years ago. Some people from renewables came to us and said we need someone non-government, non used to taking money from government, who can come in here and help us industrialize. But the people wanted to do it, right? So we took our best brains and we came up with some ideas, mostly saying, how do you cut the energy cost in half of any of these renewables? And that was kind of the premise. So all the secret stuff is in that space. But I mean, we've saved ourselves 10 years by just rapid prototyping, trying it. No, try this. No, try this. Oh, that works. Let's try that. We'll put more money into it, you know?
Okay. Again, you've learned that you have an LinkedIn stat card. That's going to be, you got to remember that. Are you active out on LinkedIn?
All the time, every day.
Are you really?
Yep.
And I said stat card and you
I just thought it was funny. I've never heard it before.
Yeah, right, man.
They called me really early on and asked if I knew their algorithm. They at first I thought they were trying to sell me something. And I'm like, I'm Scottish. Don't try and sell me anything. I like not getting money. And so they said, no. And they kept asking questions. And what are you really asking? And they were like, well, do you know anyone at LinkedIn? And I'm like, no. Then how are your numbers so good? And I said, well, we're a big company. And No. Your numbers are too good. You must know our algorithm. And I'm right. No. So that was interesting.
So what is it? You just sort of, what? Yeah. I'm looking out there. I see that you've got a lot of featured videos anyway, but yeah. You're active out there.
Well, and I've got the company to continue. All of our business lines have their own channels. And so I can just repost most of the time. And then every now and again, I'll put in my own stuff.
Yeah.
I put in my, like I work in the sex trafficking recovery area all day long. So I put pieces up that are personal, and I did all the things they tell you to do. I didn't know that you were supposed to do that, but it's worked.
And that's a hot topic too. Yeah. That's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah,
and that organization is Red M. Red M.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's a whole nother story. But.
God, I like this conversation. Yeah. It was well worth the wait.
Well, and I think just that innovative culture and how you can culture the whole thing. It's a people game.
It is.
So, and it's and knowing that people want to crush it, operations want to crush risk. And so then how do you flourish it? And how do you keep people being innovative? And I mean, I think probably one of the nice surprise things, a couple of things in the company. One is that there's a people are willing to get it wrong, which.
And, see, and that's huge.
It is. It's not normal. I didn't know that because I've been here 30 years, but I learned from others that this isn't normal.
It isn't.
And people don't pretend a lot in our company. We kind of keep a small company feel. And so people come from outside and then they start telling you how great they are. And it's just an awkward moment in our room where everyone goes, yeah, we know you're great. It's okay. You don't have to tell us that.
Right.
You know, they're used to fear and intimidation more, and there's less of that in our environment. So it's just different.
You know? Yeah, that whole shock therapy on people making or trying to make decisions, not a good approach. But it's good, man. Look at you guys. NOV is the company.
It's a company. It's not November.
No, it isn't. David Reed is the guy that was in the hot seat here. You were absolutely spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm tingly. Well worth the wait, my friend.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right. You can get a hold of him out on LinkedIn. His stat card is bristling with mass skills. And you're saying to yourself, Scott, I need help. Well, we're going to wrap it up on the other side. And, of course, his podcast will have all the contact information. David, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast.
Thanks for having me.
All right, listeners, stay tuned. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
All right, a hearty thank you to David Reed and Team NOV. Incredible, incredible innovation. Come on, you got to admit, man, that was a fun conversation. They're doing a lot of great stuff. A lot of great stuff to make our lives better, the world better, and really keep on moving business forward and making, it is fun. I'm living a dream here on Industrial Talk. All right, reach out, go out to his LinkedIn stat card. Type in David Reed. David Red, excuse me. Note that. All right. We're talking about dreaming, right? We're talking about the need to educate. We're talking about the need for collaboration and innovation. You got to do that. And you got to do it with a sense of speed and tenacity. Now is the time. People like David, companies like NOV, now is the time. You are innovationists. All right. To do that, you got to be a bold, brave, dare greatly. Reach out to people who are bold, brave, and daring greatly, and you will not be disappointed, and you will change the world. Thank you for joining. We will be back shortly.